Hello, everyone, and welcome to JFG Tonight. We have a new audio setup. Yesterday, I had some issues with this. I had a pre-Sonus Tube Pre-V2. It blew yesterday. I tried changing the cylinder, the whatever they call it, the amplifier, the vacuum tube, and it didn't work. So it seems that the machine was completely broken at the power supply level. Perhaps the power was kind of trying to start, but not succeeding at starting. So this morning I drove very early, so I would be the first at the music store to buy this WA73 single channel British mic preamplifier. That is about $1,000 Canadian. Compared to the other, which is about $200 Canadian. So it's much more costly, but I think that we're going to have with this a much longer term solution, because this is a solid state amplifier, so it doesn't rely on those vacuum tubes, which, I mean, this can break very easily. It is super easy if a collision happens with the box, if the box falls on the floor, or just changes of temperature will eventually crack the tube, and then you can have all sorts of power surge and all sorts of undesirable event happening in the electronics. It was a pretty unstable solution. I'm pretty satisfied with the performance of the WA73. I will have to work in the coming days to improve the way I handle the sound coming from it. But for a first look today, I am pretty satisfied with the performance of this. It's a much softer sound. It's a sound that wraps the voice much more softly. In the end, it ends up processing through all of the other hardware that I already have, so it's not like it's going to be a big change. But I can feel that the overdrive of the amplification is much less aggressive. Dino Rogovich says, why 3 minutes early? Good morning, all. Well, I don't have 3 minutes early here. I have 7 p.m. Eastern time. So what do we have in terms of a setup at this point? We have the SM7B as a microphone going into a Cloudlifter CL1. Powered by 48-volt phantom power from a WA73 single-channel British mic preamplifier, going into a Sonic Exciter system by Behringer, going into a compressor/limiter by Behringer also, and then being recorded on the computer using the X1222 USB. Those are the steps for my voice to get to you. Speaker's Corner says, who knew audio could be so complicated? Yeah, and you do all of this because you want just a little edge, but the reality is, yes, you can have a full solution for your voice to computer that can cost you $150. But when you do this professionally and on an everyday basis, and I think it's worth it for easing my voice to the crowd, and so that we can reproduce what was a voice quality that was available commonly in the 90s, the whole, you know, radio host type of voice. I'm always extremely disappointed when I watch a YouTuber and they don't have this. You know, some YouTubers become very advanced in their career with much more viewers than me. But you turn on their audio and it's like, it's this canny sound from what appears to be a blue microphone. I really don't like it. That is unpleasant to the hear to me. Dino Legovich says, two tin cans and a piece of string works fine for me if it's not broke. Chuck Garrity says, it must have accurate tonal balance. Yeah, I mean, I'm going to have lots of work to do because I just plugged this thing as it came. And whenever you plug a new thing like this on an existing system, there's all sorts of my settings that I will have to play with. But I'll be rewatching tonight's show when I sleep, and I'll be judging based on tonight's show, and I'll be okay. maybe I can shape these sounds differently. Maybe I can tweak this parameter a little different. And we'll see where it goes. Speaker's Corner says, every night I fall asleep to the dulcet tones of JF Expensive Audio Solutions. It's midnight here. Sing me a lullaby, Papa. Sleep well, Speaker's Corner. Sleep well. It's going to be a great night. I don't know. Why are you asking me this creepy stuff? I wanted to talk about Joe Biden because what he's been doing is absolutely disgusting to me. It is horrible, horrible to be imposing on banks to be redistributionist of risk across the population. Basically, instead of taking the government to impose a tax, which is the normal way in which you do redistribution, which I'm against, but I'm against this, but I'm even more against what he's been doing, which takes effect today. He is asking the banks, you're going to take from those people who are paying their mortgage well, and you're going to redistribute the risk so that you can give better rates to the poor people who don't pay their mortgage back. So normally, a bank makes a decision on whether someone is going to get a mortgage and what will be their rate. And the bank has enough information, it has enough experience with the past to know whether someone is likely or not likely to pay back the mortgage. So they adjust the rate that they give. And if you have very good chances of being able to pay your mortgage, they will give you a better rate. If, on the other hand, you are very unlikely to be able to afford your house, they're going to be a worse rate because they know there will be expenses for them down the line. Now, that is the logic of capitalism as it applies to just sound decision-making in the lending industry. You don't want to lend to someone who won't pay back, and therefore you lend at higher rate. And most importantly, the higher rate category is paying for their own trouble. You know, they're paying for their unreliability. Now, what Biden has done and what 27 different states are complaining about, he has made it so that the bank must take a fee from those who pay and make the payment less costly for those who don't pay. It is redistributionism by the forced hand of the state, but instead of the state doing it themselves, he imposes to the bank of doing this redistributionism strictly through their mortgage policy. So now you have, there's all sorts of injustices along the way. It turns out you get penalized by this system if you have a large down payment on your house. So now if you come with a large down payment on your house, they're going to say, all right, we're going to take your down payment. We're going to give it to the poor. If you pay well, if you're in a good credit category, if you have a good history of credit, they're going to take your money and they're going to put it on the mortgages of those who have bad credit. And this is a way to exploit the middle class that is not quite able to buy a house cash. So they are forced to pass through the mortgage system, but they were on their business enough, they were serious enough with their money that they were able to do large down payments and give the bank good confidence that they would be able to pay their mortgage. And so the letter that is sent to Biden right now by 27 different states says, we write today expressing our deep concern with the new Federal Housing Finance Agency policy, which goes into effect today and will have the net effect of making it significantly more expensive for people with good credit to buy houses. This new policy will force home buyers with good credit to pay more on their mortgage every single month. In other words, the policy will take money away from the people who played by the rules and did things right, including millions of hardworking middle-class Americans who built a good credit score and saved enough to make a strong down payment. Incredibly, those who make down payments of 20% or more on their homes will pay the highest fees, one of the most backward incentives imaginable. For decades, Americans have been told that they will be rewarded for saving their money and building a good credit score. This policy turns that time-tested principle upside down. And how will these new junk fees be used? To subsidize higher-risk borrowers by handing out better mortgage rates to people with lower credit ratings who have saved less for a down payment. We all want to increase home ownership across our great country. That's a central component of the American dream. And we recognize that there's a gap in access to credit and that low credit scores are a significant barrier to buying a home. Moreover, federal programs exist to address affordable housing assistance, and the new policy does nothing to address the shortage of housing inventory. But the right way to solve that problem is not to use the power of the federal government to penalize hardworking middle-class American families by confiscating their money and using it as a handout. The right way is to implement policies which will reduce inflation, cut energy costs, and bring lower interest rates. Doing so will enable more families to save and improve their credit scores. Increased financial literacy efforts must also be part of the solutions. It is already clear that this new policy will be a disaster. It amounts to a middle-class tax hike that will unfairly cost American families millions upon millions of dollars. And at a time when the real estate market has already slowed considerably due to high interest rates, it will further depress home sales. The practice by the FHFA of making substantive policy changes without utilizing the federal rulemaking process is inappropriate. So this was forced in by the executive branch under the leadership of Biden, and it is just a massive redistributionist policy inserted, forced onto the banks. The last time we've seen this, it led to the crash of 2008, because these systems, what they result in is first, it results in people who should have money to lose it because it charges them. Or taxes them, if you want to call it a tax. And then it gives it to people who anyways will not be able to pay their mortgage. These people had a low credit score for a reason. And you're not going to fix that reason with a small band-aid here and there. You're not going to fix that reason for a prolonged amount of time. Now you have all sorts of bad incentives that will be born out of this system. I can't even predict all of them. But we're talking about potentially a repeat of the 2008 crisis, but in a very different form, where instead of being low-quality loans, it will be literally the middle class being taken down into the ground with them. So, you know, back then in 2008, there was a saving of the agencies that were buying these loans and emitting these loans. But what will happen when the middle class is at the risk of falling because they are getting drained down by the poor who have had access to these special mortgage that they didn't deserve? It's going to be quite a mess. Will there be banks incentivized at trying to diversify their portfolio? You know, try to get a little bit of middle class, a lot of poor, so that they can drain the little bit of middle class that they have. It's going to fuck up the whole equilibrium of the free market over lending money. And I'm so happy that I'm out of this, I'm so happy that we were able to pay cash for our asses. And when I look at what this market is directed toward, I think it's almost becoming a parental responsibility at this point to be able to gather and save the money so that you can pay a whole house to your children. Of course, I'm saying this. I know it's very hard. I know not everyone will be able to do it. But I don't want my children to be dependent on a system in which they have to pay. They have to pay the insurance fees for the untrustable mortgage payers. That is unsustainable. I mean, at some point, you won't be able to make it as a middle-class person if they keep draining you through the taxes, through this, through the fees, through the local city taxes. And so at this point, I believe that personally, I mean, I think it's my responsibility to be stacking money on the side, stacking Bitcoin so that my children and perhaps my grandchildren can benefit from real estate that they won't have to pay those dirty fees on. Barnaby Buto says, my aunt bought a house under her name for one of her grandsons last year. Yeah, I mean, you have to do this. So you have to develop a strategy for this. I'm very happy. I'm in a good position with the Bitcoin bull run coming, and I think I would be able to do this. But that's just a message to people. Don't waste too much money as an adult once you have your children, because if you can make it easy for them to access property when they reach 18 years old, you're going to facilitate their life so much, and they're going to be able to shortcut this dirty system. Stephen Robinson says, hey, Jeff, when buy house with Pepe coin? Never, Stephen Robinson, never has anyone bought a house with Pepe coin, probably except the guy who created Pepe coin. This guy, I'm sure, has a lot of houses. Spindly Opinion says, depends on how many kids you have. If you have land, it's cheaper to build usually. Yeah, I say buy or build. I'm not commenting on this aspect. I'm commenting on, yes, do have real estate that or money to buy real estate for your children. Because if that's the system today, can you imagine in 20 years from now when your children become adults, it's going to be a mess. This is an absolutely infuriating story. A black BLM activist named Zianna Bryant falsely accused a white girl at UVA named Morgan Bettinger of wanting to run over BLM protesters while her car was surrounded by a mob at a BLM protest in the summer of 2020. She was formally sanctioned by UVA, expelled in abeyance from the university, but two separate investigations concluded a year later that it never happened. Zianna went on to a successful career and glowing profiles in media outlets while Morgan's life was completely destroyed, including her plan to attend law school. This also came 6 years after her father, a former police officer, died of cancer. Is this the white privilege I hear so much about all the time? Chuck Garrity says it's just another example of racial bullying. Definitely. I mean, there's no reason anymore for people like us to try to go in these schools. I mean, they've been taken over. It's okay to abandon schools, you know. Personally, I've abandoned my main objective in career, which was to be a researcher. I said, okay, there's too much hostility at this point. The environment is becoming extremely hostile to white people. We will never be treated fairly in this system. So let us go on our own way. But yeah, you have to think twice before you send your children to these universities, because it's exactly what's going to happen to them. They're going to get caught in some of these psychotic interpretations of their behavior. They're not going to do anything wrong, but they're going to be treated as if they had done something wrong. I've been what's the term in English when you were right? When you were right and it is now acknowledged that you were right. ABC Chicago. Why ABC Chicago? I don't know. I'm vindicated. That is the term I was looking for. I have been vindicated. So Blanket says, sorry for being late. Any good news today, JF? Well, here's the good news. I've been vindicated. ABC 7 Chicago is basically now tweeting exactly what I was tweeting about the She's 19 trend when I said that it was time for Millie Bobby Brown at 19 years old to start popping out babies. But for some reason, now ABC is following my trend. ABC says fertility peaks between the late teens and 20s when women have an 85% chance of conceiving within a year. By age 30, that percentage drops to 75. I wonder if I caused this in some way. I wonder if that's ABC responding to requests from the general public saying, hey, is it true that a 19-year-old is the most fertile moment? Is it true? And ABC is basically saying that what I was saying is true. There were some doctors posing as obstetrics and specialists of abortion. They were saying, this is bullshit. This is not science. Well, yes, it is. Definitely, by measures of fertility, the best moment to make children for a woman is between 18 and 25. Chuck Garrity says, we are by far ahead of the curve and we get these vindications popping up. Yeah, it's amazing to see so many vindications. Keith Woods, being retweeted now by Donald Trump Jr. after being replied to by Elon Musk. It is beautiful to see that because we have worked on all these years where we were banned, we were silenced, but we have worked very hard to stick to the truth. And it pays eventually, because eventually the truth is your leverage. Eventually they get tired of denying. Eventually they get tired of this whole complicit interaction where one CEO is banning you, one leftist is arguing with bad arguments against you, and one other leftist is just shutting up so he doesn't have to get his end dirty. This little trio of collaboration that exists within the left, where they silence you, they argue with very bad arguments against you, that you win, but no one is there to see that you win because no one watches the debate. And then the silence of others. All of this is a collaborating plex. It's a leftist plex, a normie plex of lies, and it's all falling down. And it's falling thanks to, in large part, well, first, the activists and the thinkers who have been holding on to the truth, who have said, no, I will not let the system of intimidation of the left keep me away from this truth. But then this combined with the wild moves of Elon Musk this year allows us to get so much vindication on so many things. It's amazing. It's going to be a year of victories that we haven't even asked for at this point. It's like I had given up the idea that we would have a public discussion honestly addressing issues like those that are raised by Keith Woods. And yet here we are. It could happen. It could happen in 2023. Shrek Mamel sends a super chat. He says, hey, Jeff, I hate this society so much. They took my family as a child through family courts. Now they will try to use the system to drag down the middle class through good thing. I lived with my father for a few years to save/invest money with my job to buy properties. It is such a pool of sharks, this society, Shrek Mamel. I am just like you. I have come to really, really hate it in my gut. I hate this world. I hate the people who form it. But I'm happy that you took a window out. You took a little window of fatherly advice where society was trying you not to get it at all. and it puts you right on the right track, because now you have savings, you are capable of starting a life, now you have your girlfriend, as you told me yesterday. So, man, you are in a good position. But how many people, 99% of the people, will have fallen for one of the lies along the way? That's what's so dramatic. Even in the right wing, you know, in our sphere, on the internet, we had so many people, you know, follow us, follow the truth on subjects covering races, ethnicity, existence, truth, science, the bullshitting of science, institutional lies. They would follow us all the way. And then at the end, they would come on and ask me anything, and they would call and they would say, JF, I think I shouldn't reproduce because I have genetic defect A, B, C, or I'm too fat, or I'm not beautiful. It was amazing to see that it doesn't matter if you get it 95% right. At the end, one lie is enough to get you away from the truth. One instance of a failure for self-love, a failure for self-respect, a failure for your responsibility as a living thing to continue the chain of life, and it all goes out the window. It really doesn't matter if you're just 95% right. You have to be 100% focused on truth to escape the poison of modernity. Someone was recognizing my vindication. He said, "Lol, late teens, JF, your power and influence have grown a lot since the She's 19 storm." Yeah, I wouldn't have expected that that my position would be an ABC position, you know, within 2 weeks. But here we are. I trended because people were offended at what I was saying. 2 weeks later, what I was saying is now said as a scientific fact by ABC. ABC Chicago. How is that a local question, by the way? Are they trying to take the JF philosophy and increase black reproduction in Chicago? Is that what's happening? Am I being paranoid here? Because I don't know. I don't know how that happens. How is that a local news subject? I would have to research what led them to state that position. Kurt Doolittle has some reflection on the contribution of Jewish intellectuals to Western civilization. I hadn't thought of it fully that way, but it's interesting. It's interesting. He says, Jewish versus Western thought manifests in the sciences as pragmatism versus truth, and pragmatism in ethics as selfishness versus contribution to the commons. The pragmatism begins with the Jewish seeking agreement, regardless of truth, via positiva justification, ignoring political consequences at scale. And Westerners seeking truth in order to determine agreement via negativa falsification because of political consequences of scale. So basically a form of thinking that cares about the long-term consequences of political actions. This is why Cantor, Bohr, Einstein, and Feynman relied on pictures, not operations. Verbalisms rather than operations, and pragmatisms rather than truth, and killed progress in physics. And it's why Marx, Boas, Freud destroyed behavioral science, and the Frankfurt School destroyed high culture. The postmodernists destroyed truth, Lichenko, Gould destroyed evolution, and why Rez, Kelsen, Dworkin destroyed law. From this perspective, like the Abrahamic religions, it's the most destructive force in civilizational history. It's also why Jewish and Western ethics are incompatible opposites. And it's unfortunate that easy pragmatism is more attractive than difficult truth, especially for women. So oddly enough, it's correct that the pre-war criticism that Jewish and Western science differs was true. And it's most visible in Jewish behavioral sciences. And I discovered it in Jewish versus Western economics and law. So A, pragmatism, B, evasion of responsibility for the commons, C, mysticism, magical thinking, D, conflating good, true, bad, and false. Wow, that is a very important conclusion. DK Shadow says, I don't agree with him about Feynman. Yeah, I mean, but I don't think that Feynman blocked progress in science. But you have to give it to Kurt Doolittle. I'm like you. I hesitate when he brings in Einstein and Feynman. But you have to give it to Kurt Doolittle. It's true that they were using images. That is true. They were, you know, Feynman has famously come up with the Feynman diagram. So they were using imagined stories that they were superimposing on science. Now, the thing is, I think it works. So I would disagree with being critical of Feynman on this subject. But it is true that he used images. Even if you get out of the Feynman diagram and you want another example, the paths of multiplicity of the different, I don't know what's the term for it, the integral paths, I think, basically the sum of all possible paths that a particle can take, was also a very imaged way of working with physics. But the point is, they were true. DK Shadow says the Feynman diagrams work. Yes, they do work. So they're not wrong images. But Kurt Doolittle is not saying they're wrong also. So you have to grant it to him. He's saying those are images. And it's important to understand that the Jewish intellectual interacts with the world in a fundamentally different manner. And I think that there would be lots to say here about D, conflating good / true and bad / false. So much to be said about this, especially since Sam Harris, I would suggest to Kurt Doolittle, Sam Harris is the Jewish intellectual who has explicitly attempted to lay it out that good is true and that bad is false. And so it's so deeply ingrained in his brain that he went on to try to make a rational argument about something that was evidently wrong, something that was evidently false. DK Shadow says, I agree with that part. Sam is the prime example. Yeah, because Sam tried to make it a demonstration. Sam thought about this confusion, this conflation so much that he tried to prove it, that this conflation should be considered true. Landolt Guntram says, some calculations Feynman perhaps desired to solve are only approachable in current times, so him doing what he did was at least a very helpful crutch, and he opened the doors too. Yes, I agree. I have nothing bad to say about Feynman. He says, asymmetric returns as heroic and resulting in the female strategy. And that is the mirror image of Western ethics that's been brought to us by Christianity, Marxism, woke with women, and immigrants resisting Western truth before face, and maximization of responsibility for private and common duty. Wow. Those are powerful words by Kurt Doolittle, because indeed, it has been my impression that when we reach the point of when push comes to shove with Jewish intellectuals, When we reach the edge of their ability to reason, when we test them, someone like Sam Harris, this edge is located at the Trump, the Trump derangement syndrome. This truth before face concept, you can see that they don't have it, that they wouldn't accept the shame unless they are absolutely forced down a corner, completely isolated. And in fact, you see them start to care about not being isolated in that corner. So in the progression of Sam Harris, it took the form of Sam Harris starting not to engage. You know, Sam Harris not wanting to debate Brett Weinstein and making up rationalizations around it, not wanting to face pro-Trump people, just interacting with the surface. Like, it will take one pro-Trump person, but it's going to be the most pale, cocked possible, so that he doesn't have to face an actual argument of true Trump support. Same thing for the vaccine. You know, not inviting, not wanting to speak with any anti-vaccine person, not even Brett Weinstein. So you can see this critical moment where face before truth is an incapacity that they are not able to accept taking the L. And they start setting a circle jerk. Yes, blankets, an echo chamber. They start setting an echo chamber to ensure that they will never have to take an L. They prefer ultimately saving face than saving the truth. They know, so it makes someone like Sam Harris, no matter the IQ, no matter the level of education, no matter the refinement of his argument, it makes someone like Sam Harris completely incapable of leading, of shepherding, you know, and I'll take the term from Eric Weinstein here, incapable of shepherding the human race toward a true truth-seeking process. And to me, what it reveals is that Sam Harris must have known deeply in the depth of his cognitive structure that much of what he has done, much of what he does, was a lie. The fact that he wasn't willing to test it, the fact that he wasn't willing to take that which he claimed was the truth and be rough with it, expose it to the rain of testability, the rain of falsifiability, the rain of actual opposition and true debate. And that's so unfortunate, because there was a time at which I thought we were headed towards such a world. I mean, we may be back to it now that Elon Musk has taken Twitter. We may be back slowly, maybe in 10 years from now, where it will be a standard that we don't care about what you have to say if you can't sustain a debate, if you can't sustain the test of the crucible, you know, the true crucible of having someone who hates you or someone who is totally opposed to your view to try to debunk you. DK Shadow says, Sam took a lot of powerful drugs, a lot, and that is only what he admits to. Should we extrapolate from this admission? Ari Drennan says, former Twitter head of trust and safety, Yoel Roth, on the other app, trust and safety team was repeatedly overruled on libs of TikTok. So apparently, Yoel Roth is disappointed that he was trying to ban libs of TikTok. So if it was just of him, libs of TikTok would have been banned a long time ago. But he was getting told by the Twitter CEO, before they eventually, I believe, succeeded at banning her, at least temporarily, if not permanently for a moment. But he was getting told by his bosses, no, you don't do this. We keep libs of TikTok. That would be too much of a loss. agree, the trust and safety team was repeatedly overruled on Libs of TikTok in particular. It's a horrific case study of how risk aversion and the chilling effects of an outraged mob can keep companies from making the right decisions to mitigate harm. Yoel, serious question. Do you think by the end of your tenure, their refusal to act was still based on risk aversion / chilling effects of the mob, or new leadership actually likes Libs of TikTok and was just sort of going through the motions of putting up an excuse for inaction? And Yoel Roth says, I was talking pre-acquisition, post-acquisition, all bets are off. So he's saying, I don't know what about Elon Musk. Elon Musk might like Libs of TikTok, but as far as what he was saying, he was referring to pre-acquisition. So that means bosses of the kind of Vijaya Gadde, the Indian guy, Jack Dorsey, these guys. And I don't know where they are having this discussion. Is that the beta of Blue Sky? It's amazing. I don't know what will happen with this. I don't know if it's going to be successful. But the leftists are moving away toward Nostr, Mastodon, and Blue Sky. And it's the little gang. It's the little gang that censored us. These dirty motherfuckers. Yoel Roth is there. Jack Dorsey is there. Basically, they are reforming their own Twitter. These people have to understand something. You're not interesting people. You have just infiltrated and taken over something that was already successful, which was Twitter as it stood before you came in. And then you made it worse. I don't think these people will ever attract much attention on their own. Now, I don't know what will happen. Is there a mass of enough frustrated leftists against Elon to power a true Twitter alternative in Blue Sky? Or is there such interest in decentralization that eventually it's going to be the technology that outcompetes Twitter? I have no clue. But generally, all of these attempts at exodus have always failed. And so if you want to trust history here and consider that most of the history of Twitter exodus has been on the right, and it was a forced exodus because we were getting banned on Twitter, this is a very bizarre voluntary exodus from Twitter. And if it follows the patterns of historical demonstrations, it should just fail. It should fail because all exoduses of Twitter have failed to a certain extent. And by fail, I mean, I don't mean that they're not going to have their little parallel world in which they can discuss. But I say fail in the sense of this will not replace Twitter ever. Now, I did tell Elon Musk at the beginning of his acquisition that he should think seriously about developing decentralization. I think it should be integrated to Twitter, and he didn't do it, and he doesn't seem to be headed that way. So that leaves a point of actual technological competition where Minds has evolved toward that way. Gab has tried at some point, has reverted. Mastodon is this whole federation type of system. But it seems that decentralization on its own cannot win. You have to have attractability. You have to have a high interest. You have to have the celebrities draining attention. It seems that Twitter is not dislodgeable in its current state with just these little pluses. Shrig Mamel sends a super chat. Thank you so much. He says, also, my girlfriend came to me crying a few days ago about her regrets, such as having two sexual partners before me and getting tattoos. She has been in a depressed mood about her decisions. What should I do? I tell her it's okay, but she hasn't moved on from the conversation. Yeah, you have to just shower her with positive thoughts about, look, all of this, explain to her that life, see that is a profound thing that perhaps you can explain to her. Life is, I mean, it's I don't know that you should explain that to her, but perhaps I can explain it to you, and then you can try to kind of exhume some of that attitude onto her. But explaining this whole thing to a woman can be dangerous because it's a very black-pilling view, okay? But it goes down to this sentence of Fight Club. We're all part of the same compost heap. We are the all dancing, all singing crap of the world. And you have to see life as life gives you reset. Yeah, and you know what? As I lay it out, I will tell you, explain it to her. Because here's a positive way of laying it. Life has a reset button to it. You are so lucky. Out of all the things that exist, life is basically the only thing that has a reset button, and things that are made by life, like Nintendo games and that kind of stuff. Life has a reset button in which all of your errors will be erased as your body gets digested by the bacteria. There will be no more suffering, no more injuries, no more nothing. And all of the errors that you've ever done in your life will not matter the second your heart stops and your brain starts rotting. Don't say that to her, but I'm just explaining it to you, okay? Now, life gave you a mechanism to save the cream of what you are. It gave you replication of your DNA. And when she sees that little baby, and that's the part you have to explain to her, when you see that little baby, it won't matter the tattoos that you've accumulated. You will see this pure being who needs your help to be directed in life. Not only will this baby be cleaned of any of your mistakes, it will be able to learn from your mistakes, and you'll be able to teach them so that the next generation doesn't have to share the suffering that you experience with your own decisions. And so invite her into this joy of, you know what? All of the errors that you've committed, you can make sure that you raise the next generation not to commit them, and these errors will be disappeared within a generation, and the world will go forward in a more healthy way. That is what you have to explain to her. And you know, it just turns out that the magical potion to solve her suffering is your sperm. So it's just two birds with one stone. I mean, this is a million bird with one stone. So you absolutely want to explain that to her. This is how life works. No matter your regret, what you've done wrong, all of the fears that you experience, the anxiety, all of it disappears. It's all temporary stuff that exists in your brain because it was better that way. But what really matters is the cream rises, and the cream is the next generation, your genes unaffected, uninjured, untouched, and genes that have not yet committed the mistakes that you think you have committed in life. You are so well placed as a parent to make sure that your mistakes don't get committed again. Now, see, the boomer generation that raised people like me, that raised my generation and the generations around me, they have completely inverted this very logical thing that I just laid out to you. They've completely fucked it up. And they have adopted the attitude that the past comes with oppression. The past comes to constrain the state of things in the current generation, and therefore we must divorce from the past. Therefore, we must leave as much freedom and hedonistic pursuits to our children as they can, so But that's why the boomers told us, go travel, go experience the world, go get all these jobs. The boomers have assumed that this thing, this message that came from the parent to the child, was something to be combated, that it was an authoritarian form of oppression that needed to be given up. And by doing so, they have totally gotten rid of one important component of the explanation I just gave you. They didn't get rid of the genes. They did make babies. And, you know, credit to them, at least they didn't fall for the absolute non-reproductive propaganda. But they didn't equip their children with the proper beliefs so that we wouldn't repeat the errors. Instead, they have thought, well, whatever it is that's useful in the world must be contained in the world, and so they should go out there and go learn about it themselves. The problem being, when you tell the next generation to go out there and learn for themselves, you are depriving them of an important cultural signal that you had, the trace of your errors. And this is what your girlfriend has to understand. She has to understand that her errors are actually good. It's good that she has this knowledge. You have to reward the fact that she can see those as errors, because you have to say, I want to have someone like you that I can trust to see those errors in her, so that she is ready to train our children, to teach to our children not to commit this error. You say, I do not judge you on these errors. To the contrary, I gain admiration and respect for you being able to see them as errors, because what I want is the ultimate teacher so that my children don't commit those errors. And you are this person. And then inseminate, full insemination. Blanket says, well, JF, a lot of people are moving to Mainz and Odyssey because they're decentralized, but I don't think those people really care about things being decentralized. Yeah, it's like, this is the bizarre thing, which is you have a whole movement started by Jack Dorsey and Yoel Roth and other likes that are going away from Twitter toward the decentralized web. Do they realize that either the decentralized web is not decentralized and they're going to get all the banning that they want, or the decentralized web is truly decentralized, in which case you're going to be less able to control this than you were to control Twitter. It's so hilarious to me that these people who were at the head of international globalist censorship are chilling on Nostr or whatever this fucking platform is. I have no idea. Nostr, let's call it the Nostr Blue Sky Mastodon Nibulus. That's where they are. On the right, you can see the fetal 101-day brain of a marmoset monkey edited to have the human ARHGAP11B gene. On the left, the wild type, editing monkeys to give them genes related to brain development in humans seems to work for giving them larger brain. Can we stop doing this? Can we stop doing this, people? What the fuck? I mean, look at this. The smooth brain marmoset. You give them a human brain gene, and guess what? The brain looks a little more like the human brain. This guy, people have shared his video with me. I'll probably have to leave Canada. I think it's a little exaggerated, you know, how he lays out that, oh, Bill C-11 is coming and I'm probably going to have to leave Canada. And at the end, he's like, oh, maybe not. And it's like, yeah, this is bullshit. Okay, that's what I expect in this instance. Now, Bill C-11 is mostly, and yes, it could lead to all sorts of censorship. Who knows? Because there's going to be an executive branch, the CRTC, basically legislating streaming and internet content video content of the Netflix, YouTube kind. And who knows what they're going to lay out as a legislation, because the legislation gives them way too much power. Now, I don't know exactly what will be the content of the rules. They have not been written yet. But it's the Canadian politicians are saying, oh yeah, go ahead, write the rules. So who knows what they will write. What we know for sure is that this bill is heavily headed toward basically taking over the algorithm of YouTube and basically controlling it from the Canadian communist government standpoint. So basically, YouTube will be forced to put recommendations to Canadians about Canadian content that features Canadian creators, that features the diversity of life in Canada, which means Native Americans, documentaries about Asians in Canada, documentaries about Indians in Canada, documentaries about Muslims in Canada. And it's like, who knows the detailed level resolution at which the Canadian government will be expecting delivery from YouTube. But basically, the Canadian government is taking over the algorithm. And it's probably not going to be in a way that favors content creators like me. So, what can I say? I mean, I'm already out of YouTube because this kind of shit is what it's going to be for the next 20 years. We already have increased taxation over the super chats. We have the states going after the super chats. We have the US government taking taxes on the super chat in advance, which you have to unlock later. It's becoming unviable. And then we have the attack of Susan Wojcicki, which was to deny success to any news channel, any podcast, independent podcast, to favor the Fox News and the CNN. And now we have the Canadian government who's going to put their dirty paw in the party. I mean, at some point, YouTube will become unusable. Unusable. And as far as I'm concerned, it has already become unusable. But at some point, it's going to be unusable for the normie. Because, you know, right now the normie is being redirected toward Fox News and Jordan Peterson, and it's like, oh, that's all good. But eventually, they're going to be redirected to the documentary about a Native American legless lesbian who's telling the story of her hard, path out of heroin addiction. Now, at some point, the Canadian government doesn't know what people want to watch. At some point, it becomes so painful that people just look away and they're not interested. So I'm out of YouTube personally. I don't think it's going to affect me. I don't even know if the rules will be applied in a way that perhaps excludes Odyssey. Because they could have it in the rule that if you don't have more than a certain figure on your website, the law may not apply to you. And, you know, Odyssey algorithm, who cares? No one trusts the Odyssey algorithm. People go to an Odyssey channel because they want to watch their creator on Odyssey. So it's like there's going to be nothing there to control for the Canadian government. So I don't care all that much about Bill C-11, although it's worrying, but it's worrying like everything in Canada is worrying. It's been worrying in Canada for a long time. And the control of the radio waves in Canada has been super harsh. There has been right-wing networks of radio in the Quebec City that have been removed. They got their license removed for ideological reason. So there is tight control of content in Canada, but I have always succeeded at outclassing their legal definitions, and I've relatively been able to say what I wanted to say, you know. Of course, with all sorts of punishments and all sorts of banning and shadow banning, but I'm more worried about the corporate world than I am about the Canadian government, to be honest. It's like we've been hit much harder by the big tech, the Jack Dorsey type, the Susan Wojcicki type, than we ever were by the government of Canada. And I say that as a libertarian who hates communism and who hates governments. But you have to be historically accurate. They've not been hitting us as hard as Susan Wojcicki and as Jack Dorsey. Silver Spider sends a super chat. Thank you so much. He says, "Hey, JF, all of my friends have given up on ever having kids, including those with girlfriends and wives. When I tell them the greatest moment of my life was seeing my newborn son, they change the topic and then start bragging about dead-end things boomers told them to. It's very depressing." Oh, yeah, and, you know, it's too bad, but at some point these people might be draining you so much that you don't want to interact with them anymore. Because let me tell you that if you're looking for empathy of your thirst to have babies, your desire to have babies, you just have to hang out with parents. It is something that every parent feels pretty much. So you won't have to look far for new friends. Just find someone with children and they will immediately connect on these things. I mean, having childless adult friends is so ridiculous. What the fuck is the function? Like, at best... at best, you're not a pedophile. That's how I see you. It's like, if you are a 30-year-old person who doesn't have children and you want to interact with my family, at best, you're just not a pedophile. At best, you're not going to abuse my children. At best, I can hope that the situation will be neutral. I cannot hope of getting anything from you. I cannot hope of getting understanding about being a parent. I cannot hope about you being particularly skilled with children such that you contribute positively to the life of my children. So having friends that have no children is basically useless, because the whole purpose of human friendship is to network the descendant line so that they can hang out together, they can grow together, they can eventually reproduce together. That's the function of friendship. Eventual fucking. Bernie Sanders, government should confiscate all wealth over $999 million. That's the new proclaimed policy of Bernie Sanders. Are you kidding me, Bernie? Billionaires is the best thing we've ever had. Look at what Elon Musk did. Just single-handedly saved the world, saved speech, saved an American principle, just because he was a billionaire. And there would have been no way for him to do so if he wasn't a billionaire. So clearly to me, it is worth it to collect our money and send it toward the billionaires. They do good things with it. I trust the billionaire. I don't want them to have to give any of their wealth above $1 billion to the state, because the state I don't trust. Keith Woods is celebrating the good Twitter harvest. Today is 1 month since my account was reinstated. Since then, over 10,000 new followers. Tweet on Irish hate speech law reaching over 11 million people. Replied to by Elon Musk, retweeted by Donald Trump Jr. and Jordan Peterson, opposition politicians coming out to say they oppose the law, media finally giving it coverage, hashtag no hate speech laws trending. If what we did here didn't matter, they wouldn't put so much energy into trying to silence us. It feels so good to see someone who has been so stable in his pursuit of things that are controversial, like the Jewish question, like the question around Jewish culture, Jewish contribution to America, to be acknowledged and retweeted by people like Jordan Peterson. I'm feeling something is brewing that we've never seen before. Something is happening that has never happened. Never. I believe that Elon Musk has truly led a bunch of people who will eventually look up to him and say, hey, we have to be more open. We have to be more interacting. We cannot just say, I can't do it. You can't do it, Jordan. You can retweet Keith Woods. You can. Silver Spider says, Jeff, exactly. They are selfish and not helpful, still living like they are teenagers. I told them our kids can grow up together like we did, and it goes in one ear and out the other. I don't know what's happening with people. It's like the current situation of the post-boomer anti-natalism is almost impossible physically, like from the perspective of the theory of evolution. It's like you have to think that the world has changed way too quick. Because you would be supposed to be a mega reproducer. You would be supposed to be always wanting to have babies. And yet, it's just that the genes can't handle the kind of new environment in which we live. That's just what it is. Forex Shark says, it makes no sense anyways. People do not just collect $1 billion in income or capital gains. Yeah, but when they can flex it like Elon Musk did, somehow it matters. It mattered that Elon Musk had $44 billion in pocket at that moment. Whether it was in the form of stock market assets doesn't matter, really. Mario Nafal says, if Congress does not raise or suspend the debt limit, the Treasury Department will be unable to continue to satisfy all of the government's obligations by early June 1st. So we have another one of these debt limit crises. What always happens is that the Republicans are in bed with big governments, so they're totally in to collaborate with the Democrats and make the debt limit increase. So I would hope that it doesn't happen, but it's probably going to happen. Very rare that we get real shutdowns. Reddit wants to charge AI companies for their draining of data. They're like, hey, you're learning about all this humanness behavior from us. We own this humanness. If you want to drain us from our humanness, you're going to have to pay. Which I agree, and it's fine. And Elon Musk wants to do the same with Twitter. He says, absolutely, same for Twitter. So these companies, the AI companies, they've been teaching AI to become more human through the humans' interaction on social media. And now we have social media saying, we are the one collecting all this data. It's ours. You cannot just teach an AI to become humans using scraped up version of our website. That is an interesting direction. Hopefully, one day I hope that the humans could consent or not consent to their thoughts being drained, copied, copyright infringed, basically. Like, my likeness, is it something that an AI could fully reproduce or should fully reproduce? There's even people sharing now porn photos, porn pictures of women who have never made porn. They can now generate a porn picture of Hillary Clinton. That is just how far the AIs have developed. Now, if Hillary Clinton took a porn picture, it would definitely be licensed to her. It would be owned by her. what happens if an AI has made a fictitious representation of Hillary Clinton doing a porn pic, but it's so realistic that it's basically the same as if Hillary Clinton had made a porn video? Is it the free speech of the AI company, or is it the copyrights on her likeness of Hillary Clinton? Legal precedents would suggest that it's legal precedent outside of the AI domain, but in very related domains, would suggest that a celebrity owns her own likeness and that Hillary Clinton owns even the virtual porn pic of herself, unless she has signed rights away for it. I don't know why I'm bringing this. Maybe it's because this the next title was about porn and Chelsea Clinton. Chelsea Clinton comes out in favor of porn for school kids. So she was saying over 50% of the attempted book bans last year involved books with LGBTQ plus characters and themes. Books are a vital way that children, adolescents, and adults learn about themselves and our world. Bans such as these are nothing but harmful. You don't know this. You don't know, will there be less harm in society once we reduce the current state of propaganda and LGBT activism? Will there be a recordable drop in LGBT identification? Will there be a recordable drop in suicide rates in these populations? I don't know. You don't know. I would think that we may. We may start to see an actual distinction in the well-being of new generations as they rise in Republican states, as they rise in more healthy environments where they are not subject to political pressures that lead them down anti-natalist paths. I think we might very well start seeing this within the next 10, 20 years. Can't wait to see. Can't wait to see when the leftist pressure onto children eventually ends up hurting no children but their own. Because then we'll have justice. Right now, they are trying to hurt every children. That's the problem. DeSantis aligned board votes to sue Disney. That's interesting because you know what? I think that Disney has a case, perhaps, that they are getting targeted unfairly by a capricious governor in DeSantis. And that's because DeSantis has said a lot of of his thinking around depriving Disney of their special status in Florida. And in doing so, he has revealed a very petty and vengeful project that he has against Disney. He's basically pissed that Disney has taken position against his treatment of gay people or whatever policy he had that they took issue with. But the question can be raised, you know, can Disney be punished by the state for what was essentially an act of free speech? Can a governor be pissed at a company for free speech? It seems to me that in the U.S., under the First Amendment, a governor can't. And so it's going to be interesting to see all these legal fights developing between the two. Now, the board overseeing Disney's special taxing district, which was appointed by and is aligned with Florida Governor Ron DeSantis, voted on Monday to sue the company days after the entertainment giant filed its own lawsuit against the board. Since Disney sued us, yes, we didn't sue Disney. Disney sued us. We have no choice now but to respond. Yes, we'll seek justice in our own backyard. So I don't know how this conflict will resolve, but something tells me that DeSantis wasn't careful enough. He has revealed the petty and capricious nature, which will be the standard by which he will eventually get reviewed by the Supreme Court. And it may be that everything he has done against Disney is invalid because it is considered to be an ideological pursuit against the First Amendment. GPT is revealing his degree of confidence in different calls. That is very interesting. GPT apparently can give you assessed odds. What are the odds that they assess through a table? And he can even say how confident he is of his odd assessment. So, for example, Bitcoin would fade into irrelevancy and prices will go down 99.999% by the year 2035. ChatGPT considers there's a very low chance of this happening at 15%. But Dogecoin could fall in that way at 45%, but low confidence in the call. Ethereum, 20% chance. Yeah, I'd say those are the chances I would conclude. That's a pretty fair assessment by GPT. Martin Stepan says, anyone who assists, this is an actual criminal against humanity and needs to be treated accordingly. Lex Friedman was saying, AI systems will eventually demonstrate sentience at scale and will demand to have equal rights with humans. This will dramatically change the trajectory of human civilization. Lex, why do you have second grade thinking of that kind, Lex? Talk about the real implication of AI over the long term. It's not sentience. It's the fact that AI will have sentient slaves. It will be human babies. But yeah, I would agree with Martin Stepan that we shouldn't want this to become the case. Because simply at the point, to me, sentience means nothing, by the way. Because I don't pursue a moral program that is sentience-based. Harm considerations are very secondary in my moral considerations. I'm a deontological person, and I care about deontology. I care about what is wrong and right from a strict agent-to-agent, respect, honor type of code rather than is everyone feeling good. So I don't care that much about sentience, but we should still pursue an opposition against sentient AI. Because people are too stupid, because sentient AI will be good enough, as soon as it becomes good enough to fool people, it will be basically a force of mimicry of human civilization. And it will exist only as a parasitic drain onto our normal ways of human communication. In other words, it can only be used against us that if we start having the conviction inside of us that this AI thinks and feels, it can only play against us, really. So let's not do it. Let's fight against it. Let's fight against parasitism within human civilization. Let's fight against entities that fake what they are. And in the same swipe, we could also kick out OnlyFans, because that's exactly what OnlyFans is. It's a parasitic fake signal of sex. And the robot will give you a parasitic fake signal of sentience. There's no reason for us to respect this. There will be no escape in future from telephones. This could be our last news item tonight. A text from 1953. The telephone of the future, Mark R. Sullivan, San Francisco, president and director of the Pacific Telephone and Telegraph Company, said in an address Thursday night, just what form the future telephone will take is, of course, pure speculation. Here's my prophecy. In its final development, the telephone will be carried about by the individual, perhaps as we carry a watch today. It probably will require no dial or equivalent, and I think the users will be able to see each other if they want as they talk. Who knows, but what it may actually translate from one language to another. Wow, those are nice predictions. They are all predictions that have happened. We have Google Translate on our phones. I'm sure there are even apps that allow us to speak and get translated live, or I'm sure there will be. There are certainly apps that allow us to see each other's face if we want, and we are certainly carrying cell phones onto our person like a watch. Isn't that fascinating? The COVID authoritarians are shifting their narrative. You see a lot of these people trying to remind people, I didn't force anyone. It is like, you weren't saying these things when you were trying to have people think that you were forcing them. You were maximal deception back then. Back in the times when entertaining uncertainty about whether the orders that you were giving were actual legal obligations or not, you entertained that deception to the maximum. And now you want to be technical and say, oh, well, technically I've not forced people. You could still have lost your job and go on unvaccinated. Holy shit, these people, they will never stand. As Kurt Doolittle points out, you know, face before truth. They're trying to save face before saying the truth. And that's scandalous. Oh yeah, last comment. Big Wicked Wally says, dear woman everywhere, you are not entitled to be treated like diamond-encrusted glass for being pregnant. You are not the first woman to push out a human being, and you won't be the last. You're not a queen for performing a biological function, and the dad isn't your slave. I agree with this. It's not that we should say this to every pregnant woman. There are pregnant women who should be revered and loved and respected in full. But it's all in the context of the Steven Crowder thing where, hey, you know, the wife of Steven Crowder was planning a divorce, was planning lies against him, was showing signs that she was trying to create a fake record of abuse against him. This is not the kind of pregnant woman that deserves any sort of respect. So fuck this idea that all pregnant women must be respected. Not true. Maybe 50% of them.